Last Sunday, or two times ago that I spoke here, I talked about karma and the role of our intentions in creating the conditions in the mind, in our lives, for either greater happiness or well-being or the opposite. And then last week I talked about equanimity. And part of the connection between karma and equanimity is that having a deeper appreciation of karma and where the responsibility lies for well-being and suffering lends itself to a very healthy kind of equanimity. And kind of equanimity that can be an expression of love, or is an expression of love. The quality of equanimity is often at the end of a lot of lists in Buddhism. It's the end of, partly because it's considered to be a very high level of attainment in the spiritual path. It kind of follows a lot of other developments as a person develops themselves on the path. And that appears in, there's one list where the equanimity appears last, and that's in the 10 paramitas, the 10 paramis. And it's said there that equanimity perfects loving kindness. So it's a wonderful connection between loving kindness and equanimity. In the 10 paramitas, the first category on the list is generosity. So today I want to talk about generosity. So we talked about the last one first, and then the first one last. And generosity is a very beautiful quality of the heart, of the mind. It certainly inspires a lot of people and is meaningful for a lot of people in many different ways. It's hard to imagine human culture without people being generous to each other. It'd be inconceivable because there's so much generosity that goes on, whether it's between family members or between neighbors or friends or in various extended ways. Generosity kind of makes, in some ways, makes the whole system kind of work. And there certainly are more generous and less generous cultures. I was blown away when I was 17, kind of first time I was traveling alone with friends away from my family. And I traveled kind of like as a hippie in a Volkswagen van in Greece, Yugoslavia and Greece. And we hardly had any money at all. And eating, just living on kind of water, bread and condensed milk. And coming to Greece and discovering the astounding level of hospitality that we experienced. I'd never experienced a culture that seemingly was so hospitable. That people would, strangers would invite us over and we'd join their family picnics and just outpouring of generosity in many ways. And it was really beautiful. I was really inspired by that experience in Greece. A number of traditional cultures have very strong ethic of generosity, of hospitality. And I think some of them at least, where it's a very high responsibility is to be hospitable to strangers. People come to your community, come to your house, they're a stranger. You would invite them in and you treat them as a very honored guest. And I remember going to Morocco when I was 19 as a hippie. And we weren't exactly guests because we were paying. We went into some little oasis kind of on the east side of the Atlas Mountains. Up in the mountains, we found a little oasis, and there was a little place we could stay. We camped out, we slept outdoors in this little oasis, and around this pond that was kind of little, or spring that was kind of considered a sacred spring. And there were all these carpets around on the ground around the pond. And we were paying to stay there, paying for dinner that night. But the dinner and the way we were treated, I felt like we were treated like royalty. the way they came with dish after dish, these beautiful platters, silver platters, and we were these long-haired 19-year-old hippies, you know, and I felt like I was treated with great honor. And I'd never experienced someone actually treating me with that kind of honor, especially someone who I was strangers for. So we have cultures where the idea of generosity and hospitality is considered has a very high role or very important for people. And partly people don't want to shame their honor by treating perhaps a stranger in disrespectful ways. The Buddha in India, the time of the Buddha, was a culture like that, seemingly, where generosity was a very strong element of the culture. It was well appreciated, understood by the culture of the times. And the idea of hospitality was also seemingly very central and very important. And if you think of someone like the Buddha, who was raised as a warrior, that there's a certain kind of dignity or traditionally in kind of warrior cultures of what it means to be a warrior, how you carry yourself, your honor, your self-respect, and what it all involves. And part of that in traditional culture was the expression of generosity, that things are offered. And what you find then in the Buddhist texts, in the ancient texts, you find a lot of emphasis on generosity and the importance of it. And it's sometimes just assumed that that's kind of part of the deal, but sometimes there's teachings on being generous. And the Buddha gave lots of them. Some of them which make a lot of sense to us, and some seem a little bit unusual or odd to us, maybe because of very different cultural situations. But generosity then has been a very important part of the Buddhist tradition down through the ages. And I'm quite inspired that we're sitting in a field of generosity to be sitting in this building here. Because in order for us to have bought this building and now that it's Insight Meditation Center, it's completely because of people's generosity that this happened. So, you know, it delights me to sit in a field of generosity and walls of generosity. Floors, you know, sitting on this floor. And it's all acts of generosity that made this possible. Isn't that great? I think it's wonderful. I go to Spirit Rock, the meditation hall there, and I just, like, same feeling occurs. Wow, I'm sitting in this space of generosity. So it's continued down through the ages. And there's lots of stories about generosity and the practice of generosity. I'll give you two short little ones. One of my favorite ones is the one about a monk who was traveling around the countryside, and monks are not supposed to have a lot of possessions. Sometimes you just have one bowl and one robe and whatever. But sometimes, if they have a lot of wealthy supporters, they're actually the one robe and one bowl as they're wandering around barefoot around the countryside might be relatively wealthy material. So this one monk was a teacher of the king, and the king had given him a golden bowl. So he was wandering around the countryside in his golden bowl for his alms, right? He laid himself down to sleep one night in some place out in the grove of trees or some ruin someplace. As he was going to sleep, he noticed that there was this person who looked like a thief kind of lurking around the columns or the trees nearby and kind of ready to, you know, seemingly keep with his eyes on the gold bowl. So the monk said, "Hey, come over here." When he came over, he handed him the gold bowl and said, "Hey, you want this, take it, because otherwise you're going to come after I fall asleep and disturb my sleep." So he took it and ran off, and the next morning the thief came back. But he wasn't really a thief, right? Because he was handed it. And there's a lot of stories in many traditions of you somehow preemptive generosity. In order to save someone from the karma of having to steal something, you hand it to them first. This thief came back the next day and said, I never encountered someone who was so freely generous. I've come to be your disciple. Another story from the Talmud, I think the Babylonian Talmud, of a daughter was born to the family, and the parents went to an astrologer to ask what the fate of this daughter would be. And the astrologer said, oh, she will die on her wedding night, on her wedding day. And so, that's not good news, but they never told the daughter this. So she went through her life, and it was time for her to get married. And so they had this marriage ceremony and the wedding day, and I imagine that the parents, you know, were kind of quite sad at this event because they had this prediction of what was going to happen. But it happened that at the wedding reception or the wedding party or whatever, that a beggar, a poor beggar, came to the door, knocking on the door, asking for food. And many of the people at the party had no time. This was an important party, and they were engaged, and you know, this was not in the flow of things to handle it with a beggar. So they kind of ignored him and shooed him away. But somehow the daughter got wind of this, and the daughter went and offered him some food from the party. The day continued, the wedding night happened, next morning she woke up, and the parents were surprised that she was still alive. So they went back to the astrologer. And he said, what happened? You made a prediction. And the astrologer said, oh, there was only one way to change her fate. And that was through acts of generosity. So, you know, in the Buddhist tradition we talk about karma. Acts of generosity are said to have very powerful karmic consequences. They change our fate. How do they change our fate? How does it do that? We can certainly be superstitious about it. But if we're, on the other hand, if we're too rational about it, then I think we lose something also about how it works. So we're stuck. but it does. You know, how does it change our fate? How does it change our karmic stream? How does it change our dispositions of our minds and what tends to happen to us? And there are beautiful, not only stories in the Buddhist tradition about generosity, but there are also beautiful teachings about it, some that seem very idealistic. One that appears often in the Zen tradition, I think they sometimes chant it in a meal chant, or this is certainly one of the teachings, is they talk about the emptiness of the giver, the receiver, and the gift. That it's necessary to realize the emptiness of these three things. And that's interpreted in many ways, realizing the emptiness of it. But part of it is not to be caught up in, I'm the one who's doing this, or caught up in, I'm doing it for that person, or somehow caught in some kind of attachment to the object itself. That there's kind of a free flow, there's a kind of letting go, there's a kind of open-handedness in the act of generosity that is almost spontaneous or natural, or almost as if we're not there, just kind of flows. And that's certainly a beautiful ideal to live up to, and occasionally that happens. And maybe some of you have had that experience at times, to have it that easy. You know, someone, strangers are walking on the street, and the stranger trips, and so you put down your hand to help the person up, and you continue on your way, and you don't think about it again. It was an act of generosity, that maybe emptiness of self, emptiness of other, and emptiness of what was offered. In a couple of places, the Buddha gives eight reasons why people might be generous. And I hope it's not an exhaustive list. But there are eight reasons why he says, and you know, he talks about things like people might give out of fear. People might give because in return for what was given before. People might give in the hope of getting something in return. People might give because it's the tradition to give. People might give because it's, you know, you get a good reputation, it looks good, or it's good, you know, it's a good thing to do. There's many reasons for giving. The eighth in the list, which is considered the highest reason to give, is it's very unusual. When I saw it, at least, I was surprised by this. In order to adorn the mind. Isn't that interesting? To adorn the mind. and to make the mind beautiful. Now, why would that be the highest, you know, reason? I think often in the West we think the highest motivation would be because, more selfishly, you wouldn't do it for yourself. It's just selfish kind of giving for the other person. Kind of the emptiness of self, other, and the gift is kind of just beautiful kind of expression. But here the Buddha says maybe the highest is to adorn the mind. And how the tradition understands this is that acts of generosity, acts of giving don't necessarily do this. But acts of generosity does. You know the difference? No, everybody understand that difference? The act of giving is just giving something. Act of generosity involves giving with a quality of mind, a quality of heart, where there's generosity in our hearts. Right? So giving by itself doesn't necessitate having generosity. But it can. And in the Buddhist tradition, there's a distinction made between those two. And those of us who are in this kind of scene a long time, we use the word dana for generosity and for giving quite indiscriminately. It's kind of like the word we use. And we often think that it means generosity. We say that some places even. But actually, dana, what dana literally means in Pali, it means the gift and giving. So it's the act of giving, and it's the gift that's given. That's dana. And there's a different word used for generosity. And that word is chaga. And I'll say more about chaga a little bit later on. If I forget, let me know, because it's an important part of the talk. So an act of generosity adorns the mind. That it's beautiful. Hopefully we think of a generous mind, a generous heart as being beautiful in itself. But it also creates beauty in the mind. That then creates the optimal conditions, or better, not optimal, better conditions for a person to do meditation practice. And part of the reason why adorning the mind has such a high value in the tradition is because it's creating the ecology that makes it easier for us to practice meditation. And then practicing meditation, that's the path then to becoming free, to freedom. And being able to offer freedom to ourselves and to the world around us is considered one of the highest gifts you can give. So here, generosity is done for the benefits that we get from it. And there's no idea that that's inappropriate or selfish. But if you're doing it only for yourself, it's something off, right? But if you're doing it only for the other person, I suggest that maybe there can be also be something off there. Easily can be. But is there some ways in which a generous, a clean act of generosity can actually in some healthy way be seen as benefiting ourselves and benefiting others at the same time, or both? Can we somehow include ourselves in what's being benefited? One way to do that is to think of generosity as a practice that we take on. And as a practice, as a spiritual practice, it isn't a virtue that comes out of us naturally, particularly, maybe. It's not, as a practice, it's not, we're not doing it because, you know, it's, you know, we think it's a good idea or naturally moved to be generous. But as a practice, we do it partly to understand how we're not generous. As a practice, we practice generosity in situations where we wouldn't normally be generous, in order to find out what's going on there for us. Where's the attachments? Where's the holding? Where's the wisdom that's operating? What's happening there where there's a little bit of tension around, or a lot of tension around, wanting to be generous? So, for example, one way to practice practice generosity in order to see what comes up and to understand yourself better and maybe to help kind of then let go of that which needs to be letting go of is to take a significant amount of money. I'm thinking a $50 bill. Get a $50 bill. Go to the bank and get yourself a $50 bill. And spend a week carrying that $50 bill in your pocket, looking for some total stranger someone you've never met before, that you're going to give it to? What would happen for you? What would go through your mind? What would be the considerations? What would be the way that you're looking at other people and considering other people and thinking about them? And where is that generosity? What would it mean to give to someone? And what are the best ways of giving us $50 so that you, so it brings a sense of well-being to you? You don't adorn your mind if you feel lousy. You don't adorn the mind if you feel kind of deflated from what you've done. You don't adorn the mind if you do it kind of just offhand. One of the instructions for giving that the Buddha gave, which made more sense before credit cards and checks and, you know, end of the year letters and all these things, is he said you should always give with both hands, with your own hands or with both hands, and because it's more respectful to give with your hands than just put it down until you pick it up. So there are idealistic ways of talking about generosity, inspiring ways of talking about it. There's ways of taking on generosity that's a practice. And as a practice, hopefully it brings up tension that we can look at and kind of refine ourselves by looking at that tension and including it. But I'd like to suggest that generosity, the practices of generosity, the act of generosity, has a kind of tension as part of it that often comes with it. And perhaps we can think of it as a healthy tension rather than a, problematic one. So what I'd like to ask you to do is to close your eyes for a moment. Now I'm going to do a little guided reflection for you around generosity. And I'm going to bring up various scenarios and then roam around in your memory to see if you can find some incident in the past that somehow fits this scenario. So remember a time when you were the recipient of a clean, kind of healthy act of generosity. And that act of generosity was given as something incidental. It was easy for the person to give it. It didn't really require much from the person, just, you know, here. But it was significant for you. So an act of significant generosity to you, for you, where the person who's giving it could give it in a simple, offhand, or incidental way. Easy way. And what was that like? Remember how you felt? Felt in your body? What emotions you had? Your response? What were the thoughts that you had at that time about this act of generosity? And then let go of that. And now think of a situation where you were the giver, and then you gave something in a healthy, clean way to someone that was somewhat incidental or very easy for you to give, but that was significant for someone else. And what was that like? For you to be the giver in that kind of situation, how did you feel? What happened to you? What were your thoughts? And then letting go of that. Now, think of a situation where you were the recipient of someone's generosity. It was a clean act of generosity, healthy. It was meaningful for you. But for the person who was giving it, it required a lot. It was a real sacrifice, a real extension of themselves, or it was a real, you know, effort or a big deal that they would offer this to you. How did you feel in this situation? And what kind of thoughts did you have? And then finally, a situation where you were the giver, it was a clean or healthy giving that you had, that you performed. It was significant for the receiver, and it really required a lot from you, a lot of effort, a lot of sacrifice. It was a major deal that you would offer this to the person. And what was this like for you, to be a giver in this way? How did you feel? What were the thoughts you had in response to having given? And then letting go of all that, all those images, and take a few moments to reflect on whatever seems appropriate in relationship to these four scenarios. The difference between them, how you felt and how you responded. And then you can open your eyes. And so perhaps we can have a few people mention a little bit about what happened in that exercise. What are some of the differences in how you responded or felt in the different ways? Yeah.
In the instance where there was some effort required on the givers to me, it was a real emotional experience. I mean, I was having my eyes closed and I started to cry. Realizing what was involved in the half of the other person
involved. Great, thank you. Yes?
One thing I recognized is that the intervention of time is that the significance or insignificance of a gift often isn't really clear immediately. And between the receiving gift and the realization of its significance or insignificance, a whole series of behaviors can occur between the giver and the recipient, which can then be proved false. Something which seemed offhand at first, in the situation I was thinking about, a gift that seemed offhand at first, I realized 2 years later was actually a very significant gift. It was a very heartrending experience to realize that. Mm-hmm. I've been very offhand in my relationship to that person during that 2 year period.
I was in Germany, and my friends and I were taken in by a family in San Diego, this similar kind of hospitality which we experienced in Greece. And I complimented a woman on a very interesting ring she had. And it had been handed down to her through the family from her great grandmother, a handmade poison ring, which is called the mountain. And when I told her how amazing that was, she took it off and gave it to me. And I never could imagine myself doing that to a total stranger just handing over a family heirloom.
There's a Zen priest in Oakland named the Gengo Akiba Roshi, and he has a Zen center there, a little Zendo. And he wanted a Buddha for it. He needed a Buddha for it. He was traveling in Japan, and there was a beautiful Buddha statue that in some kind of little inn that he was staying in, and he just felt resonated with it. Really meant something for him. And he knew that he couldn't ask to buy it. That wasn't possible. So he asked if a person would give it to him. And the person did. Yes?
When you say 2 things, is that I have never thought of it before until you spoke about this quality of adornment, mind adornment. And on a lot of the thoughts I have about generosity both ways, I realize that there was some sense of gold to myself, both giving and receiving. And it really fit with adornment. And the other thing that I'll say, and I can feel emotionalizing right now, is that I can remember so many acts of kindness years ago that just bring me to tears. Mm-hmm. It goes on over time and builds in the mind.
I was realizing that the generosity of this center, that it actually goes back beyond us, because somebody might have scraped it and put condos here at some point, but instead there were these various congregations that that gave, and the building remained.
So Cheryl says that in terms of generosity, like talk about generosity of this building that we have, that generosity goes back beyond us. That there are other people who were generous before us and made this building possible and preserve this place as a place of spiritual practice, and that if other people hadn't done it, it might have ended up as condos, she said. But you know, that people need housing, so a liquor store. Yes. Yeah, we get letters and emails from all over the world from people who say that they feel connected to our community here, that they've never been here, because they're listening to our talks. Oh, I've been tracking what's going on in your community and following it. It's kind of like realizing that, I don't know exactly what to say, but it's like realizing something has its life that is way beyond what was obvious, what I thought was going to happen. You know, you kind of show up and you teach or whatever, and it has this, goes way beyond us. And so it is an act of generosity. And there's individuals who are putting in their time and effort in order to make that possible. And like Lewis sitting there, and other people, you know, it's their act of generosity to make it possible. Yeah.
I'm thinking about permission, giving permission. I'm thinking about my mother. I immigrated to the United States, and I know it hurt her to not have me in my own country, but she never nagged, and I think that was a certain generosity to give me permission to do what I wanted to do. Now that I'm thinking about that, was a big sacrifice.
So the permission of if someone wants to do something, like a child wants to move to a different country even, feels it's right to do something, and the parents are going to feel hurt or feel sad by that. But instead of holding on, rather giving permission to leave, even though it'll hurt, is a big act of generosity. If you're volunteering, say, in a hospice, and you have a shift, you go in for 4 hours once a week to go help clean, clean or do all kinds of ways that you take care of people in hospices. And it's an act of generosity to go be helpful there. And you've done all kinds of things on your shift. Maybe you even think of yourself as being generous. Maybe or maybe not, just you're doing it. But then you've been there for 3 hours and 59 minutes. In a minute, your shift's going to be over. And you have other things planned for the day. And at 3 hours and 59 minutes, someone throws up all over. You look at your watch. Couldn't they have done that half an hour ago? Where is generosity then? I don't say that to say that you should give up everything else and do the, and help clean up. But I think in that situation where you have 1 minute left in your shift, or that then there's this there's this pull and push, there's this consideration, there's this tension that arises. Until then it was easy to be generous, but now you have other things planned for your day, and you have to weigh. What's the most important use of your time, or where is the most suffering or the most benefit going to come from where you put yourself? It might be what you have to do next is so centrally important that if you can't stay beyond that 4 hours, and you have to kind of leave that person there for a while until the next person comes on shift, maybe. But there are times when all the complexity of life comes into play, and there's a certain kind of tension around giving. There are times when giving can be very easy, and times when giving requires a sacrifice or something to extend ourselves beyond maybe what we would normally do. And then there's a kind of tension in that, perhaps. And maybe tension is maybe the wrong word, because it's almost a pejorative word these days. But there's a kind of I can't think of another one right now, better word. But certainly some consideration, some thinking of the pros and cons, some balancing of things that has to go on. Isn't this next? What? Well, certain equanimity is important in the middle of the tension. Of wondering. A struggle, maybe? I don't know. That's also, maybe the wrong word.
Investigation.
Investigation is right, but it has a kind of a little pressure to it, little tautness to it, what should I do here? It's like... what I'd like to suggest is that generosity often will have a little bit of that tautness. A little kind of, I want to be generous here, but how far do I want to be generous? Someone asks for money on the streets and you say, well, I'm going to help you with money. But then the question is, how far do you want to go? The story I was thinking about earlier was, so many years ago I was in Palo Alto, and this person who was probably homeless, looked like it, asked me for some money so he could have buy some food for dinner. And I said to him, because he was going to buy something at McDonald's right there, and I said to him, I'll buy you dinner. And he said to me, okay, I trust you. And I wondered, who's being generous here? And so then we went over there, and it was McDonald's. I didn't think, you know, it'd be, you know, that you could run up too big of a bill. But I had some thoughts about, well, how much is this guy going to order now? and then how far am I willing to go, and how much he's going to order? So, you know, that pull-push. And as it turned out, he ordered only very little bit. And I said, I would buy him, you know, a big dinner, but he didn't want it. I don't know what was going on, but... So the word chaga, which means generosity, also means relinquishment. It means letting go. And it has two different meanings. And because it has both meanings, you can kind of imagine maybe they overlap a little bit. That an act of generosity perhaps is an act that sometimes can be spontaneous and easy, but it requires giving something of ourselves. And I think of a generous act as partly being an act where the giving is not expected. There's a lot of situations where we're expected to give. It's kind of part of the system. You're supposed to give something. And you do it because it's expected. It's part of the system and whatever. And it's not, you know, it's not exactly generous. I wouldn't say it's not generous, but I wonder, and I'll leave you with this question. I'm not going to say that I don't have the answer, but I wonder that when we're generous, when there's an act of generosity, that it is an extension, extending ourselves beyond any expected ideas of anything beyond what's expected in the moment. And so there is a kind of then a little bit of a tautness or tension or consideration is, how far should I go here? How much of myself do I let go of? How much do I do here? And then at times, we come up with an answer to that question. Oh, I let go of this much. And today I let go of this. Tomorrow I let go of this person. I let go of more. And for my child, if I have a child, I'll give up everything. I'll give up my life if necessary, as an act of generosity, perhaps. How much are we willing to let go of? And in letting go, does it adorn the mind? Does it bring a sense of well-being to you? Does it bring joy to you in doing that? Or a sense of freedom or ease or well-being? Because if it doesn't, if you don't feel happier because of doing it, if you don't feel buoyed, enlightened, and a sense of well-being from your act of generosity, then I would like to suggest, not that I'm an authority on this, so take me lightly, I would like to suggest that maybe it's not an act of generosity. I feel a little bit, maybe that's wrong to say that. But you don't believe everything I say, do you? So think about that. Think about, you know, the tautness that might be there, the challenge of generosity, how generosity might be a practice you undertake, how it adorns the mind, and how both you and others can be benefited from the act. And if you don't feel some sense of well-being in what you're doing, then maybe stop and reflect deeper why and what you're doing, why you're doing this and how you're doing it, and think if there are other ways of doing it. So may everyone benefit from your generosity. Thank you all very much.